comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful planet we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Some of you are joining us for the very first time. Welcome aboard. Welcome to talk radio like nowhere else on Earth, and that I can guarantee. Some people enjoy alternative radio because they like to think outside the box. Well, some nights we can't even see the box from here. So you'll love this. And we are this week focusing on 2012 and the end of times. Now, the reason we're doing that is because I got quite a bit of email. I didn't know really why I was getting this email about 2012, over the past week or so. I really didn't know why, and then I discovered that one of the cable channels was showing just sort of endless documentaries about 2012 and end of time scenarios and things like that, and people were concerned about it. Well, we've had a number of guests on this show where a number of guests who are experts or have expertise in this kind of information. And so I decided to bring them on this week. And I hope that what you're getting from this is that there are very diverse views, very diverse perceptions that people have, all looking at essentially the same chunk of evidence, the same data. But they have different perceptions of what all of that adds up to. And tonight we are going to be talking with Jerry Wills. Now, Jerry Wills is an explorer, many other things as well, but a well-known explorer of ancient sites. And Jerry's got some information regarding an ancient site and 2012. So, a site that he has been to, and some of you may have been to. So, we'll be talking with him after our first break. Very quickly, let me address something. Last night, just in passing, the subject came up about one of the possible scenarios that people are putting out there is that Obama, President Obama, may be the Antichrist, and that this matches sort of a prophecy or a vision that Gene Dixon had years ago. In passing, I responded to that. I didn't dwell on it, but I said, well, the problem is that all of the information you have about this whole thing of Antichrist comes from the Bible. And so you have to use the Bible data about the Antichrist to determine if he fits that. And he doesn't. Well, I got email today saying, I can't believe that you're an Obama supporter and all that. Look, get off of it and grow up. This is not a political show, and we make no political discussions here or political statements here. That's not a political statement just because he happens to be a politician. If you told me Daffy Duck was the Antichrist, I would have said the same thing, and that is Daffy Duck doesn't fit the data that the Bible provides about the Antichrist. Okay, so tonight we head south of the border in search of information about 2012. We'll be back right after this.
Thank you.
welcome to the Kevin Smith Show and my guest, Jerry Wills. Jerry has been with us many times before, and I certainly hope will be with us many times in the future. Tonight, we are focusing on, and we'll talk about some other things undoubtedly, but we are focusing on the series we're doing this week, and that is the series regarding the year 2012 and the end of time. Before we get into this, let me address also a group of emails that I've gotten where people are trying to convince me one way or the other that 2012 is going to be a big calamity, and can't I see the evidence? And 2012 is not going to be anything at all, can't I see the evidence? And 2012 is going to be a great ascension spiritually, can't I see the evidence? Ladies and gentlemen, I am not the person you need to convince. I am not the person you need to write your emails. Look, don't get me wrong. I want your emails. But I'm not the person to address those questions to. The persons you address those questions to are the guests. They are the ones presenting the information. And so when we open the phone lines later, I really would urge you now to start exercising your fingers and get ready, because when we open the phone lines, that's your chance to address those questions to the people that have the information. All right? Jerry, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. It's good to talk with you.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for having me back on. What a privilege.
Jerry, you know, every time you come on this show, we talk about something entirely different. I don't know how one individual packs that much stuff into a lifetime. But you apparently do. Let me say this, Jerry, I talked with you about this today, and I do need to mention this to folks. On Friday night, I'm going to be at the premiere of this movie everybody's talking about called The Appearance of a Man. I understand that UFO Digest has published a review of that. And it's award-winning. It's already been in some film festivals and has won some awards. So I'm looking forward to that. I'll be there Friday night. The show will go on, though, folks, so don't miss it. And we'll be bringing you some video from the premiere next week. Okay, so we'll be there doing the premiere. All right, Jerry, 2012 has come to prominence, just the numbers, 2012, has come to prominence as a result, primarily, or at least originally, of the Mayan calendar and some Mayan prophecies regarding something that's going to happen in 2012. Those look toward the future. As an explorer, you obviously are looking at things from the past. You're going to ancient sites. You're looking at things that have already been. But sometimes you find something that points forward to the future. And I understand that you have come across something kind of mysterious about one of these ancient sites that is connected in some way with 2012.
Yes, that's exactly right. You know, about 10 years ago, Kathy and I started going to these ancient sites. It wasn't just Peru, but it was in Central America and here in the United States as well. But predominantly, of course, it was South America. The things that I had found in the 10 years previous of looking around there, they were just very enigmatic for me. I didn't have as much knowledge about the subject, although I did have a great deal of curiosity as a result of having had conversations with some very unique individuals over the years. And the things that I kept looking for, and again predominantly in Peru, was to find answers to the suggestions that had been made to me that 2012 was an event date. It was a pin on the map. I figured that if this was the case, that there had to have been another pin on another map long ago when there were people who had already experienced what their 2012 was like. And, of course, as I said, I wasn't that well educated into this subject. Over the years, of course, I've read a great deal. I've spoken to quite a few people. And what I've discovered is that, yeah, there was another period in time, and we're looking back about 25,000, 26,000 years, round numbers. And the things that happened to those folks really changed their world. So I decided that it would be good, and, you know, Kathy and I both really decided it would be good if we could find their records, and in doing so, it would give us an indication of what we might expect in this upcoming period of time that, you know, everyone now is calling 2012.
Okay, now, Jerry, you said this really changed their world. And it happened 25 to 26,000 years ago. How did it change their world?
Well, the best evidence that we have is poor, because, you know, if you take a look at how things deteriorate just over 1,000 years, unless it's made of stone and large blocks of it, you don't see very much that's left from 1,000 years ago. We've seen mummies, we've seen ancient sites and so forth in the jungle, in the Andes Mountains, and on the coast of Bolivia, Peru. No, Bolivia doesn't have a coast, but Peru, Chile, Ecuador, these places are barely even discernible, and they were quite well made. So you take a look at something that's 10,000 years old, and it's deteriorated, or it's just been completely covered. You go now to 25,000 years old, and the traces of what was left are almost non-existent. Instead of seeing large structures, you see mounds of dirt that just look like a rise of a shallow hill on a long flat plain. But what we were looking for were some sort of evidence in some place that might be somewhat protected so that we could glean some knowledge from it. And what we discovered is that there was very little of this, and as a result, what we did find, we could extrapolate from what we knew was there, from archaeological discoveries, what we could see for ourselves that had not yet been excavated, and what little bit we had found that was in extraordinarily remote locations, that something incredible had happened to the landscape. And we don't know if it was tremendous rains, tremendous winds. We don't have any idea what it was exactly, or at least we didn't. It wasn't until just a couple of years ago, when we were still doing research, Kathy studying satellite photographs and old maps, ancient maps from the 1400s forward, that pieces started to come together. And then when we discovered Google Earth, that gave us a really valuable tool to where we could actually go out into space 30,000 miles and take a look at the Earth. And judging from the ancient the ancient writings that we had found about things as strange as, for example, the Earth stopped and didn't turn for 3 days. In one part of the world, it was 3 days of light, and the other part of the world is 3 days of darkness. Well, taking these pieces into consideration and then applying some physics, it became pretty obvious to us that something extraordinary had happened. You see, when you go up, for example, to the Atacama Desert in Chile, 13,000 feet up to 14,000 feet, there you find huge sand dunes, and in these sand dunes you can still find the bones of porpoise and whale and fish, and they've just been deposited there. Pulling back using Google Earth, we could take a look out from 30,000 miles away. And if you take a look at the southern edge, the western side of South America, you can see progressively a large, large desert that's taken over. And we've traveled these deserts to see what was there. It's, of course, extraordinarily dry. But there are also, even high into the Andes, large deposits of sand with shells in them. We believe that part of what happened is the Earth did stop. And because of inertial momentum, the water did not. And it went flowing towards the east, coming up out of the ocean, going up onto land, and eventually right over the Andes Mountains, or at least up into it. This, to us, helped us to understand why Lake Titicaca, which is the highest navigable lake in the world, would have a percentage of salt water to it. Why we would find enormous salt flats at 13,000 feet. And by enormous, I mean thousands of square miles.
Jerry, when did this event take place in history? The best you've been able to determine.
Well, the best we've been able to determine, it took place somewhere in the vicinity of about 25,000 years ago. But it looks like something also took place at about half that duration of time, which would leave it at about 12,500 years ago. Something else happened.
And what was that?
Well, something similar. We don't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
We found a stone that was buried under black earth. We traveled for about a week, going back into a terrorist-held area in northern Peru. It was very dangerous for us to go in there. We eventually got to this this mountainside, deep, deep into the mountains, and there under the black earth, just barely sticking out, was a small protrusion of stone the locals had told us about. That's why we went. Now, dotted on this somewhat flattened landscape, and we're up about I'd say in the neighborhood of about 5,000 feet. Dotted along this landscape are large blocks of well-crafted stone. And on the face of each of these stones, just kind of like a child's rectangular-shaped block, if you will, just popped up here and there in this field, several of them. On each of these stones, you would find the spider. You would find spirals. You would find the shape of a person. And these were carved into the stone. The stone that we were looking for, however, was a little distance from there, probably another 75, 80 feet further up the side of the mountain to another flat spot. We started to unearth this stone because we were told that there was something very important on it. As we unearthed it, it became apparent that there was. And what we saw was a series of drawings on a wedge piece of stone that depicted a person with hair that flips up on the sides, and it looks perhaps like a woman, because maybe it's just because they had long hair and it flipped up like a 60s hairdo. But here was, let's say, a woman, and she has this terrified look on her face. To her right, it looks as though there's a whale and some other figure we can't identify. Across what we figure would be the sky was a line and then a dot, something in the heavens, perhaps. To the right of the unidentifiable figure, there was the figure of a human, let's say, a side profile looking to the left, but he had something on his back. We couldn't tell what it was. And then the next sign was the same woman face, but she looked very resolved, and she had a rainbow over her head.
How big is this stone?
Well, it's probably, I'm guessing it's about 10 foot long. And the part that we had exposed, we really didn't have all the tools. We didn't expect we were going to need to dig. The folks there did have tools to dig with. but we decided to cover it back up and come back so we had better equipment to document this with. The dirt was actually protecting it. So we figured we'd go back in there, but when we did go back, we had to turn around and leave. There was a death squad coming for us, so you know, they weren't going to let us go back in there at all without some trouble. So we haven't gone back, but we do plan to go back in there.
Now, was this the trip where the Peruvian military came in helicopters and extracted you?
Well, they brought in some special forces and surrounded us and then escorted us out with a troop of special forces guys.
I see. Okay. So when you look at this stone, you're looking at a woman that's she's very disturbed about something. And then I think you said to her right, there's a
like
whale.
A large wave.
Waves.
Like a large wave. And then a whale, then a figure I couldn't identify. Now, interestingly, that other figure looked like a profile of a person looking at them as though they were facing to your left. We may be making a stretch here because I can't say for sure what it is. But when I compared that to Zachariah Sitchin's Anunnaki figure, it looks identical to it.
Okay.
So I'm still, the jury's out on that. I want to get back in there and actually do a full-blown investigation of this. It's just that it's been too dangerous lately to do, but, you know, we still need to get in there and do it.
Okay,
we
so...
We don't know where it's at.
So this stone is from about 12,000... years ago, 12,500 years ago, right?
Well, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have no way of knowing when the stone was actually carved. I'm thinking, yeah, maybe it was. But it could be much older than that, for all I know. I mean,
what do you think the significance is? What do you think the significance is? The local people told you that it was important, you needed to see it. Why? What's the significance of it?
They just felt that it had some significance. They didn't know what it was, but they wanted us to try to figure this out for them. You see, the rest of the story is that the reason we even found our way back in there, it has to do with some very large stones that had drawings on them.
Okay, Jerry, we'll have to get the rest of that story when we come back from break. We've got a break coming up here in 2 seconds. Well, there it is now. Okay, folks, we'll be back with Jerry Wills and ancient sites that point to 2012. We'll be back on the other side of this break. We are back. My guests this evening, Jerry Wills. And Jerry, I had to cut you off in mid-sentence there because the break was taking over.
Oh, that was fine.
Okay, so you are were telling us that the significance of this big rock that you uncovered is sort of unknown because the people thought it was important. They wanted you to take a look at it. You did what you could do, and then you had to be extracted because there was a death squad coming for you. So where did that lead you, and what discoveries did you make relative to 2012?
Well, we didn't really know how that fit into the 2012 scenario, but we felt that it had some significance because it did show something, we thought it showed something that had taken place in the past. And, of course, as I mentioned, our quest is to locate any records that we can that would have been made either before or after a great cataclysm had occurred so that we would have some way of understanding either how they knew that something was going to happen or how they recorded what had taken place.
Okay, so you kind of look at this stone as a recording of an event that was cataclysmic.
Yes.
Okay.
And I think those other stones that were postured around that field, we discovered that there was a well that was right in the middle of all of these stones that needed to be dug out because the townspeople, or actually village people, said that there was something very significant down in that well also, but we didn't have a chance to do any of that. But I think that those stones were placed around were actually stones representing different clans who had gone to that location for their safety.
All right, now the field where those stones were where it was located, how big is that field and how far apart are those stones spread out from each other?
The field was about the size of an acre, really. It wasn't huge. The size of the stones, I would guess that they were about 5 foot tall by about 3 foot across at the front, probably 2 foot deep, and they were made of granite. Several of them were still standing straight up, but a few had tilted off to one side.
Okay, and was there any pattern in the way they were arranged around the field?
Well, that's one of the things we neglected, really, to take into account. There did seem to be a randomness to it when we were looking at it, but, you know, when you look at the night sky, the stars are in a somewhat random pattern until you start looking more closely. And it could be that these stones had been placed into a specific pattern, and we just didn't catch that. We were really trying to hurry when we got there. We were quite exhausted. It was a climb up the side of a mountain, at least 1,500 feet, just hand over fist, just to get to this area from the village.
Okay. Now, you said this sort of fit into something you discovered later.
Well, it did. we discovered several other sites in the Andes that had some significant correlation to these, and we also heard of some sites that we didn't have a chance to visit that also seemed to be very much like, for example, that large area of land, that acre of land with these stones sticking up. So as we took into account where these places were, which was what we did first, we discovered that all of these places were at about the same elevation. They were on the same side of the Andes, and they kind of formed a line going north. So it seemed to us that whatever had happened, the 5,000-foot line, and that's in general terms, I don't have the exact GPS coordinates, so I can tell you the exact elevation, but it was about 5,000 feet, and it seemed like that was a safe zone for whoever had decided to go to these places, and I'm guessing for either meeting up with everyone or for their survival. I don't know which.
What side of the Andes were they on?
They were on the eastern side.
So it sounds like if they're going there for safety, whatever it is they're running from was coming from the west.
Yeah, exactly. And see, one of the things that we had not taken into consideration was that if there was this tremendous overrushing of water, the actual speed the water would have traveled at would have been supersonic. There would have been so much wind associated with this, it would have blown everything ahead of it in its path, and when it reached the tops of the mountains, then it would have just jetted right over it, creating a bit of a vacuum. And we're talking mountains that are quite high, you know, 18,000, 19,000 feet. So, being up at that elevation, even if you could be up there, to live, which we really haven't found any evidence that people were living at 18,000 feet. But even if you were up there, you'd just be gone, because the force of the wind would have absolutely just blown you apart. It wouldn't just blow you away, it would rip you apart. So we felt that whoever was left over after the event, they were on the eastern side of the Andes. Something took place. It really caused a lot of damage. I'm sure the water flowed over the mountains, at least at some point. I don't know if it went over all the way to the Amazon, which I just don't know if that would have happened. But these people were what was left over. And I think that they were probably quite intelligent, judging from the craftsmanship that we found.
All right, now,
things.
Take us from there to Teotihuacan. Because that's where you discovered a connection to 2012. What is the connection that takes us from 5,000 feet on the eastern side of the Andes from there to Teotihuacan?
Actually, it's Tiwanaku, Kevin.
Oh, Tiwanaku. Okay.
Tiwanaku in Bolivia.
Okay.
That's located at the southern end of Lake Titicaca. It's on the Altiplano, and in general terms, it's about 13,000 feet above sea level. And that's where we made really quite what I think is an extraordinary discovery just last year.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that's always fascinated me about this place is that if you're walking out across the Altiplano, you're walking in silt. It's almost as though you're walking on a dried up ocean bed. It's not that there's salt, although there is some salt in the soil. Not much grows there. But because it's so silty, it's just absolutely so fine. And of course, from satellite imagery, we can see that silt extends all the way west to the ocean, across mountains and such. The closer you get to the ocean, of course, the more wind there is, the more rock that's exposed. Now, Tiwanaku is sitting at 13,000 feet generally, and for the longest time, we've been looking at this and wondering and reading how other archaeologists and scientists had wondered, why is it that Tiwanaku is not in absolute alignment with some star system, like a lot of the other places are? You know, like, for example, in Egypt, you have the Orion thing going on, and Machu Picchu, you've got the Pleiades, and Cuzco, you've got the Pleiades and Orion, and so forth. So you have very distinctive features that line up in very specific ways to known constellations. But Tiwanaku does not. It's off ever so slightly, just, you know, a few degrees, but it just doesn't line up. It was during this last trip that we discovered that Tiwanaku, the amount of degrees that it's off, corresponds exactly to the ecliptic cycle. And at exactly December 21st, 2012, Tiwanaku is going to be lined up exactly to the center of the galaxy. It's just amazing.
All right. Now, you know, that's sort of like number systems that don't have a zero, and so you have you start with one, and those are there are number systems that were in use that were like that, and yet they assumed zero. Now there are remnants of that still used. For instance, if you go to Europe and you say, okay, I'm going to an office that's on the first floor. Well, coming from America, you expect that you walk in off of the street, to walk into the building off of the street, and you're on the first floor. Okay? You're not. The first floor is the next one up that we call the second floor. And that's because in our numbering of buildings, the floors of buildings here in America, we don't use a zero. The first floor is the one you walk into. But
I see.
In Europe, the first floor is what we call the second floor. So we assume zero and don't use it when we number the floors of buildings. And so you assume that there is the center of our galaxy, but that's not a constellation that we normally talk about. And yet it is a constellation. The center of our galaxy is a constellation of stars.
Right. It's called Ophiuchus. Ophiuchus. It's kind of a strange name.
Mm-hmm.
Or Asclepius. That's the 13th house. And, of course, you can imagine how exciting it was to find out, you know, see that this is pointing right to that area of the sky that only occurs every, it's about every 25,920 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
So I might as well say 26,000 years. Now, when they built Tiwanaku, they must have had a very keen idea of astronomy. Not astrology, but astronomy, about how the ecliptic works and how to prepare and make a graph and so forth. That takes a lot of, we'd be hard pressed today, most of us, to sit down and figure out the stars to the degree that they had.
Jerry, our break just took over. We'll have to pick up there when we come back. And I want to know, what is the significance then of Tiwanaku? We'll be back. Welcome back. We're talking with Jerry Wills, and Jerry is describing for us his discovery that Tiwanaku, an ancient site in Bolivia, is lined up with no known constellations. When you think of the 12 constellations, the 12 signs of the zodiac, it's not lined up with any of those. It's lined up with the center of our galaxy. And that alignment actually only happens every 25,800 years or so. And I think that's called the Great Cycle or something like that. But it's every 72 years, because of the wobble of the Earth on its axis, the Earth changes its alignment with constellations by 1 degree every 72 years. It takes 25,800 years or so for it to come back into alignment where it started. And Tiwanaku is aligned with the center of the galaxy, which I guess is the starting and ending point of that cycle. So, Jerry, what's the significance of Tiwanaku? I mean, that would seem to me that if the people that laid out that city had this kind of astronomical knowledge, it would seem to me that it would give some sort of great importance to the city of Tiwanaku in the ancient world.
Well, yeah, it seems like that to me as well. You know, and keep in mind, there's not a whole lot left of Tiwanaku. Most of it is covered in this silt, like the ocean just rose up and deposited a bunch of dirt on top of it and receded and left it covered in literally, you know, tens of 20s of hundreds of feet of mud and debris. What's left, what you find, is sticking up out of this. And archaeologists are going through and digging it out and taking it out. While we were there, it was also discovered that there are a series of pyramids around Tiwanaku.
Mm-hmm.
And each of these are also lined up to Tiwanaku, and each of these are pointing towards the 13th house.
Okay.
What they've gotten out of them so far.
All right, now, what's the relative age of Tiwanaku?
Well, that's the other part that's really quite interesting. No one really knows, but from what we can tell from archaeologists and researchers we've spoken to, they've dug down through different layers. The last report that we had is they went down so deep that they went back to about 28,000 years ago, they suspect. They don't have an actual absolute date on their depth, but they suspected it was about 28,000 years ago. As they were digging down, they discovered, first off, very crude pottery, a little deeper, much better pottery, until finally they got down to the 28,000 year depth, and they found pottery that was more exquisite than they have ever found anywhere on Earth. It had been created with such craftsmanship, it had been glazed and painted and so forth, that it was absolutely, just absolutely fantastic. So instead of making this public, they left it there and filled the hole back in, because, you see, if it doesn't fit the paradigm of what is believed to be the age of things, then these guys were going to be ostracized, and they didn't want that.
So well, and in fact, that has been done with certain archaeologists that have come forward with, shall we say, forbidden archaeology, archaeology that doesn't fit the paradigm. And you see, I said at the beginning of this show, folks, we think outside the box here. We talk outside the box. Sometimes we can't even see the box from here. So here you've got in South America at 28,000 years ago, an advanced civilization, and they have aligned Tiwanaku with something you really can't see most of the time. And that would be the so-called 13th house or constellation.
Well, even beyond that, Kevin, it wasn't until just within the past year that they figured out that it lines up with this.
Yeah.
No one even knew this until the past 12 months.
All right, now, what do you think? Do you think that Tiwanaku was built before this last 28,000 or 26,000 or whatever it is year cycle? Was it built before that and we're looking at what was left over after, or was this built shortly after and we're just looking at the remnants of a ruined civilization?
Well, you know, it's only guesswork at that point.
Well, if it's 28,000 years, that would be, it would have had to have been built a couple of thousand years before the last time we went through what people are predicting for 2012, because it's on about a 26,000 year cycle.
Yeah, it's about 26,000 years, 26,000 round numbers. But the problem with having absolute dates on that pottery is that there is a lot of research, a lot of testing that has to be done in order to validate the age of the pottery. But let's say that it is 28,000 years old. That would mean that for at least 3,000 years, they knew that this great alignment was going to take place. The great cross is what it's called, and this great cross was going to take place. If that's the case, then Tiwanaku was built before this, predicting that it was going to happen, or perhaps it was built right about the time that the last Great Cross occurred. So for whenever it was, I believe that it was probably around 25,000, 26,000 years ago when it was made. We find evidence of the Tiwanakan culture all throughout the Andes. We find it in Ollantaytambo. Well, you know, I mean, if your listeners have gone to Expeditions TV, you can see some of these things. Ollantaytambo, Machu Picchu, well, just a whole list of them, and you can see evidence of the Tiwanakan culture in these. I'm working on one right now called Silistani, which is, it's within, you know, a day and a half's drive of Tiwanaku, still up on the Altiplano, and it also has Tiwanakan culture in its design and what they've done with the stone. These folks were extraordinary when it came to working with enormous areas of stone. There are some walls there that have all tumbled down that are nearby to Tiwanaku, and it's called Pumapunku. It's about 5 or 6 kilometers away from Tiwanaku. And these slabs of stone are, let's say they're about 25 foot long, about 15 foot across, and about 3 foot thick. These were stones that were placed as walls. And there were other stones that were placed as the ceiling. And they were so exactingly created that they fit together without any mortar, but they did use a molten metal staple kind of apparatus to kind of hold them together.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of those.
Yeah, and you see stonework that looks like what we would do with woodwork today.
Mm-hmm.
Nice flourishes and rolls and, you know, textures on the stone. And this is into basalt and granite. It's extraordinarily hard stone. Very difficult to work with ancient tools. It's somewhat difficult to work with modern tools, although we do have things we could do it with today. But we're talking about, you know, 25,000 years ago. They made these things that were just gigantic.
All right, now, Jerry, let's go back to Tiwanaku. Let's talk about 2012. Let's talk about, is there anything about Tiwanaku that gives us some sort of a clue about when we go through this galactic medium, which will, in fact, this part of 2012, we know. We know that we will pass through the galactic medium in 2012, and I have heard, and I cannot verify this, I have not verified this, I have heard from many sources that this will happen on December the 21st, 2012. When we come back from this break, I want to know if there are any clues at Tiwanaku. We'll be back right after this. Welcome to all of you who are joining us just now in this second hour. We're glad you're here. We're talking with Jerry Wills. We're talking about some of the ancient discoveries, or discoveries at ancient sites that he's been to in South America, specifically Tiwanaku, and its connection with 2012. And the connection, for those who have not been with us for the first hour, the connection is that Tiwanaku, it was discovered last year, is lined up with the center of our galaxy rather than being lined up with any of the other constellations as other ancient sites are. And so, you know, it's kind of interesting that it would be lined up with the center of our galaxy, because that alignment only takes place every 25,800 years or so. And it will take place, apparently, on December the 21st, 2012. So, Jerry, what I had alluded to and what I had asked about before we went to break, when we look at Tiwanaku and the fact that it's lined up with the center of our galaxy, and the fact that that alignment only takes place every 25 to 26,000 years, and the fact that it is supposed to take place in 2012. When we put all that together, what clues do you see from Tiwanaku? What does it mean?
Well, I think what it means is that in relation to some of the other things that we've discovered, for example, the doorway of Oromuru, I think it's telling us that there's a connection between the Earth and a much higher realm, perhaps the realm from which the gods come, because we're pretty sure that these doorways, and they have several of these strange doorways all over Tiwanaku. No one knows how they were standing, no one knows how they were stood up, but of course everyone's familiar with the Sun Gate at Tiwanaku. Where it's setting is not where it was actually positioned. And these very tall statues, and these statues, incidentally, are covered with almost microscopic writing and symbols covering the entire statue, and the great statue is probably 20 feet tall. The lesser statues are 15 or so feet tall.
Have any of these writings, these carvings, as you said, almost microscopic, have any of these been deciphered and translated?
No one knows how to. There have been a lot of people trying. But the really significant point here is that on the doorway and on the statues, you find this character that is standing with a snake in both hands. Now, if you take a look at what the characterization is for, gosh, I can never get this name right, Ophiuchus, that is a character standing with a snake that's moving, like he's holding a snake in both hands, just one snake.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I find it odd that they would have the same basic symbol with this guy that has this headdress on, that has a snake in both hands, and he's standing there. And no one's really figured out what that meant either. One snake's pointing upward, as I recall, and the other snake, I believe, is pointing downward, but I don't remember that exactly. I could try to find that out. But the point here is that he's holding a couple of snakes. Now, if you take a look at the center of the galaxy, when we get to this point, the sun is going to rise, and right behind the sun is going to be this dark black band. I mean, if you could see it from space, this is how you would see it. And this is called the Great Rift. It's a dark area that's in between us and the very center of this galaxy. Simultaneous to that, you have Scorpio that's rising at about 7 degrees. So what this means is that Scorpio is not just the scorpion. Scorpio is also the eagle. And the difference between the eagle and the scorpion basically is this. The scorpion represents the lower self. The eagle represents the higher self. When the sun rises that morning of December 21st, 2012, you've got the snake and you have now the eagle. That's standing right there above the snake. The eagle is also the thunderbird, or it's the phoenix. And I think they're trying to tell us something. I think this is a major piece of information that is slightly being missed and not looked into as deeply as it could. I don't know that it necessarily means world cataclysm, but I think maybe what it means, if not world cataclysm, I think maybe what it means is that we have just entered into an opportunity to find our higher and greater self and reconnect with the gods who created us. And what I mean by that is you'll have to listen to Kevin's DVD set to understand more comprehensively.
Thank you for that plug. I appreciate that. Okay, we're going to open up the telephone lines, and the telephone number, ladies and gentlemen, is 623-444-5889. If you need to call me on the toll-free line, we do have a toll-free line, and the toll-free line is 888-223-4599. So here they are again. If you can call me without it costing you long distance, call me on 623-444-5889. If it's going to cost you long distance to call me, use our toll-free number. It is 888-223-4599. If you live outside of the USA and you live outside of Canada, you can send me a flash message. If you're inside the USA, if you're inside of Canada, use the telephones. To send me a flash message, go to my website, scroll down, you'll see the link. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, this is Ryan in Washington State.
Hi, Ryan.
Yeah, Jerry.
Hi, Ryan.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi.
Jerry, do you agree with William Henry in the hypothesis that in 2012 a stargate will open? That's kind of some of the stuff that he talks about. Does everybody realize how close this is to Christmas? Everybody will be in the Christmas season at this time. And I'll just take my question off the air.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Well, you know, William Henry is a brilliant fellow. He's got great information and is a really nice guy. I believe he's onto something. You know, one of the things that we've noticed about the Stargate at Oromomuro, that strange doorway that's in Episode 3 at ExpeditionsTV.com, is that it seems to have become more and more active every year that we've gone there the past 10 years. We're also being told of other places in the Andes where there are similar doorways, and these are now becoming active as well. The local natives who live up in the mountains are letting it be known that something very strange is taking place. So, yeah, I agree with him. I think this is the case. I believe that we have these portals here in North America. I think that they're really, there are locations all over the world. It isn't specific to South America at all.
All right, let's go back to the telephone and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Hi, Kevin.
Hello there. Hello there, Jerry. Long time, no talk.
Yeah, hi, Kevin. It's good to hear from you.
Yeah, it's good to hear from you, too. You know, the 2012 is also deemed as the return of Quetzalcoatl, who is the chief god of these people in South America. Quetzalcoatl has also been identified as Thoth, who Zechariah Sitchin also positively identified him as the son of, I think it was Enki, one of the Sumerian gods, one of the Nephilim gods, actually, from the ancient past. So, do you think it's possible that the return of 2012, according to, if the Mayans and the ones in South America are correct about this what's happening in 2012, could we also see the return of the Nephilim, with all these connections that have been made with Quetzalcoatl and the ancient Sumerian deities?
Well, I think that it's a good idea to keep watching the skies. Because really, the information that we have, everything tells us that something is going on in the sky besides the Great Cross,
mm-hmm.
besides the Great Crossing of the Ecliptic. My experience with UFOs and extraterrestrials down in South America has been, you know, pretty odd. I couldn't say it's extensive, but there have been encounters and sightings. On many occasions down there. And one of the things that I've noticed with the locals, the Quechua, the natives up in the mountains, they all say that they came from the Pleiades and that they're coming back at 2012. So, I don't know. It certainly has me wondering, and I certainly watch the sky whenever we're down there.
And have you noticed? Have you been noticing an upsurge in UFO activity?
Well, I think that's been taking place worldwide.
I mean, especially at those locations, like those Stargate locations. Have you been noticing any surge in UFO activity in those areas?
Well, I haven't really noticed a surge, but I've noticed that throughout these remote places, there are more and more people who say they're seeing things that they can't explain, more so than there were, say, 10 years ago.
All right, Kevin, thank you so much for the call. Good questions.
Thank you.
All right. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. And if you need to call me toll-free, please do so at 888-223-4599. And caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Debbie from Columbus. Thanks for having Jerry on again. It's always interesting when he's on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Jerry. I wanted to ask a question. You mentioned earlier about these statues that you had found while you were there, and you mentioned the writing. Is there any way that there might be like sort of a code, like how the Rosetta Stone became a code for being able to crack a lot of the cuneiform writing in Sumerian? I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thanks for the call, Debbie.
It could be. It could be that there is a code that's in there. The main issue with extracting any code from these guys is that I've got a low battery warning. Give me just a second.
Okay. And we'll take this second to say that if you wish to send me a flash message, first requirement, you cannot be in the United States. You cannot be in Canada. We have telephones for those. But you go to my website and scroll down. You'll see the link that says flash message. So if you're in Asia or Australia or Europe, South Pacific Island, wherever you may be, all across the continent of Africa, you can send me a flash message. Now, our telephone lines do work from anywhere in the world, but if you don't want to make that international long-distance call, you can send me a flash message. Jerry, let's go to the phone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show, and if you will, tell us your first name and from where are you calling.
Hi, this is Rex from Miami.
Hi, Rex.
Hi, Rex.
Hey, hey, Jerry, I was wondering, on a previous show you talked about your past with extraterrestrial contacts. I was wondering if they'd given you any insights for 2012 and also when your next scheduled visit was.
Well, the next scheduled visit, I'll start with that first, and I also want to answer the gal's question who called just before you after I answer your questions so Kevin will know.
Mm-hmm.
Here's how the contacts occurred. They had sort of a schedule, I guess, happening every 10 years. The last time that there was contact, supposed to be contact, was September 11th, or within a period of 2 or 3 months around September 11th, when the Twin Towers came down. Now we take a look into the future another 10 years, because it would be another 10 years, and that puts us right in proximity to 2012.
Okay.
As far as what the information was, you know, the information basically was that something was going to happen that was going to take place between 2010 and 2012. And to be watching for the signs. It was rather enigmatic. It wasn't specific and distinct. It was just basically here's something to think about, and here's some information for you to consider. And that's about all I can say about that.
All right. Rex, thanks for the call. Oh, you got another question?
Oh, well, yeah. You said that the meeting did not occur then in 2001?
No, it didn't. They said the 10-year period beforehand and the periods before that, they always told me that something was going to happen, that the world would either go in one direction or the other, and that I would know what direction that humanity's path was going to be if I would watch the signs. And they said it'll be unmistakable. Well, it was. And the path would either be one of peace or one of war. And so I was told to watch, and I would find out. And I found out.
All right. Rex, thanks for the call. All right, yeah, you had not finished answering Debbie's question.
Yes. The issue basically is this. The Bolivian Army used these large statues for target practice with their large caliber weapons. So there are bullet holes. And while largely the hieroglyphs are still intact all over, they don't let you go up there and make a rubbing or get a clear, detailed account of what there is on these statues. The best you can do is to take pictures. We were there, so I used the HD camera, and I took pictures all over the statues. And we're preparing a video called Tiwanaku, City of the Gods. It's going to be a future episode on Expeditions TV, and in this you'll be able to see very clearly what these tiny little hieroglyphs are. And if you have a good resolution monitor, you'll be able to pick out exactly what we were picking out here with our monitors. It's very clear. But it's just incredibly small. It's just so small, it's amazing.
Jerry, the Tiwanakan civilization, what were they? Were they Mayan or are they pre-Mayan?
They were pre-Mayan, at least in my opinion. I mean, I can't speak as though I'm an expert about when they existed, but what I've seen, I think they were pre-Mayan or existed about the same time, because they have a lot of the same characteristics as the Mayans as far as their technology goes, technology of the stars.
Okay, now we know that the Mayan existed in a period of time after the last time the Earth went through this galactic medium. So we know the Mayan existed post-galactic medium.
Right.
That would indicate then if the Tiwanakan civilization built that city prior to going through the galactic medium, they survived it.
Well,
because they would have transmitted their technology and information to the Mayans who came later. If I understood what you said earlier, you can see Tiwanakan influence and culture throughout many of the later civilizations. So it would seem that they survived it.
But there are a few essential aspects of Tiwanakan culture, the way that they built things, that I've not seen in other cultures like the Mayan.
Hmm.
There are differences.
All right, let's go back to the telephone. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jerry.
I was just saying, but they do have similarities as well. I mean, there's, it's a mixed bag.
All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Greg from Kennewick, Washington, first-time caller.
Oh, well, first-time callers, we got to put some applause with that. And you said your name is Greg?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just want to talk to Jerry for a second. I had some information for him back when he ran into the windstorm and blew his tent down.
Mm-hmm.
There's a website from up in New York State that... I can't think of it right now. The lady's name is Deg Twig, and they're doing some research on some Indian mounds there, Spanish Hill Waverly, New York, and she had a connection to a shaking tent ceremony. And I think she got the information from out in the Western Mounds, but I haven't been able to find the contact again, but I can call her or I can give you the information. But tonight is my night off from work, and you've touched home with me. I've been up here in Eastern Washington looking at some peculiar stuff, and when you talked about Ophiuchus in alignment with the center of the galaxy, I've been looking at some silhouettes created against the sky from and it looks like a human being or a man laying down on his back looking up at the sky. And as the sun comes up and comes from darkness to light, the silhouette is pronounced even greater. The basalt stone is black, and underneath the foot of this character is another mound, and when the sunlight shines on it, it looks like a snake coiled up. And the snake is looking south. And on December 21st, the winter solstice, the sun rises on what would be a conical-shaped mound that looks like a pyramid. And the sun rises on the left side of the pyramid where the foot or leg and the foot would come together, and shines on the side of the dirt, and the dirt glows like the sun before the sun comes up. And the sun rises, rolls up the left side of that pyramidal shape stone, and comes off from the tip of it, and does not go up into the sky. It goes south across the top of that snake, and it crushes the head of the serpent.
Wow, that's interesting. Okay, look, we've got a break coming up here in about 10 seconds. And on the other side of the break, Jerry, if you want to comment on that, you can. And we'll keep the telephone lines open and take your calls, all right? We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. The telephone number is 623-444-5889 or toll free at 888-223-4599. Just before we went to break, we had Greg, a first-time caller, that described for us something that he was seeing in his part of the United States, up in the Northwest, I believe. Jerry, did you want to comment on that?
Well, you know, I found it just absolutely fascinating, and I would like it very much if Greg would send us an email so that we could be in touch with him and, you know, perhaps schedule a time when we could go up there and take a look at this ourselves. There were people all over the world who survived whatever it is that happened, and these folks left behind, collectively left behind, ways for them to predict the next round of things that might happen. They didn't probably know for sure if it would or not, but they did try to leave something or create something, let's say, that would give them an idea where they were in time, where they were in the scheme of things, and how they could best keep track of time so they could be prepared for the next time that this happened. A real good example of that is in Cusco. I have a real good friend that has that has done some research in Cusco, and what he's discovered is that the alignment of the Coricancha is the Coricancha, by the way, is like the hub of the universe for the Inca. And personally, I believe the Inca took over what they found there. They didn't do this themselves. But anyway, the Quarry Conch is in the middle of Cusco, and he's found that it lines up with the Southern Cross on the 21st of December 2012 at 11:11 local time, which is the same time that Tiwanaku lines up with the center of the galaxy. So all these folks were putting together things that would give them a way of tracking time and tracking events so that they would not be taken by surprise, so they'd be prepared.
All right, let's talk about that a little bit, being prepared. See, the problem that we have, Jerry, and you and I have talked about this, the problem that we've got when we start talking about 2012 is that there are, strange, anomalous bits from the ancient past that tell us something is up with 2012. But the problem is interpreting that and knowing really what it says. And because there are so many different interpretations of these incomplete bits of information, I have said, okay, if it happens, we'll all find out on the same day. There's no need to worry about it today. Let me say to the caller that is on hold, if you'll just hang on, we'll bring you up next. But Jerry, what do you think about that? There's just not much that we can really know for sure about what's coming. So I say, just live today as if it's not coming, because there's nothing you can do to stop whatever's coming.
Well, see, and that's a real good message. Here's the deal, folks. If you prepare for something like this from a state of fear, and of course it sounds reasonable that you might, but if you prepare for it from a state of fear, you're missing the whole point. Entering into this region of time and space, from every place that we've gone, from every site that we've explored, everything tells us that this is a moment when the great healing takes place, not the great destruction. So I think it's important that you take a look at the unfolding of 2012 and the events that are leading up to it and the things that will happen afterwards. It's a pin on the map. This is about your personal evolution. And it's also about a planetary evolution. It's about us being able to go beyond where we've been and have an opportunity to go further than we've ever gone, doing things that we've only dreamed of doing. Not that everything we know is to be torn asunder and destroyed, and that certainly has been quite well evidenced in the past. But every time this happens, it's an opportunity, and we can make a choice whether we want it to be an opportunity or it can be a huge destructive force. Now, a lot of folks are saying, oh yeah, we'd be a lot better off if this or that happens and this was all wiped away, and it's true. Some of it I agree with. But the thing is, it doesn't have to happen as a result of huge Earth cataclysms. It can happen as a result of your decision to be proactive and do something about it. And this incoming energy, this age transformation that we're entering into, this is an opportunity for us to bring that energy into our bodies and become the people that we actually want to transform this world into what our dream of the world could be.
Well, you know, Jerry, I kind of look at it as sort of galactic surgery. It's and maybe I'm wrong, but you know, you go in for surgery, you only lose in surgery, you lose something. Okay, they take something out of you usually, but you lose what's killing you anyway. And they don't take working parts out of you. They excise what's killing you. And so I've kind of viewed 2012 as maybe a sort of a galactic surgery. Let's go to the telephone. And caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Matt. I'm calling from Madison Heights, Michigan.
Hi, Matt in Michigan.
Hey,
hi.
Matt.
Hello. Hey, you know what? I just wanted to say that I think, Jerry, you and Kevin both, what you just had to say is probably one of the best things I heard on this subject in a long time. I guess my question is this. You'll notice, you know, that if you, say, turn on a History Channel or even look at movies that are coming out, that this idea of 2012 is really present in the TV media. But any time that I see anything about it, they only talk about the Mayan calendar. They don't talk about all these other archaeological findings that are correlating to this date that are actually much more spectacular feats than the calendar itself. It just really surprises me that, on the one hand, there it is, and on the other hand, a lot of people, I think, aren't seeing this whole picture. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I agree with you, but I think the reason they do that, Matt, is because they haven't talked to you. You are the one who made the discovery about the Cori Concha, and they haven't talked to me or some of the other people who have made equally interesting discoveries that could point to a much larger worldwide base of places that are saying the same thing as the Mayan calendar. But instead, they're looking at the Mayan calendar because, well, everybody's familiar with that. Not too many people are familiar with Tiwanaku and what Tiwanaku means or where it's pointing, or where Cusco is pointing, and what is the significance of it pointing to the Southern Cross. You know, there are questions that they don't know to answer or to ask, and so we don't have an opportunity to answer. But I think if we actually collected ourselves and put this together, we really don't need them to ask the questions anyway. The piece that's missing is not that they're not asking the questions. The piece that's missing is that we're not putting the answers out there because we know some of these things exist and no one knows to ask about it. I think that we should put together these pieces and make it available for people so that they would have another resource beyond what is the die-stamped resource of History or Nat Geo.
Well, yeah, I agree. I think that would be a really good idea.
Yeah, and you're a good one to do that. Kevin, this fellow you have on the phone?
Yeah.
His name is Matthew. He would be a very interesting guest for you. He's done some phenomenal investigation into very peculiar alignments in Cusco.
Well, Matthew, if you'll send me an email and give me some information, we can go from there.
Well, I'll certainly do that.
All right. Outstanding. Thanks for the call.
All right.
Excited to listen.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, the telephone number is 623-444-5889 or toll free at 888-223-4599. If you live outside the USA and you live outside of Canada, you can send me a flash message and I will be more than happy to read it. And we'll get Jerry to comment on it. As a matter of fact, a flash message just came in. This one from Humberto in Mexico. And it says, I would appreciate it if you can ask your guest if he knows something about the visit of Neil Armstrong to the Los Taos cave in Ecuador. And what was the deal with the scientific personnel that accompanied him? What was the purpose of the military escort around the cave? Great show as always. Best regards. Do you know anything about that?
Wow, what a great question that is. You know, that's the Cave of the Ancients. And if we knew where that was, well, we used to have the GPS coordinates for it. And I had a hard drive crash and I lost it. Even with that, we know the entrance to the cave was sealed by a landslide, which is not that uncommon in that part of the world. But that cave is just amazing. As far as what the military escort was and all of this, I think the military escort was because they didn't want any of the national treasure to be secreted out, and because the people in the military would not allow them to go into this area because it is dangerous. They wouldn't allow them in there unless they knew they were protected, because there's a liability issue, especially if Neil Armstrong is part of the contingency of people.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the scientific people who were there, I haven't a clue. I don't know what to address about that.
Okay.
All I know is when they went inside, they found the things that Kathy and I have been looking for. But we feel that there are several depositories like that strewn throughout the Andes.
Well, and we hear that there are depositories like that throughout the world.
Yeah.
There's supposed to be all the records of the Atlantean civilization stored somewhere in Egypt, and Edgar Cayce said they would be found there. There are probably vast storehouses of immense knowledge of ancient civilizations and high technology. And I would suspect that some of those have been found and kept secret. We have to step away for our final break. We'll be back, ladies and gentlemen, on the other side of this break. Time for one more call, so get your fingers ready to do the dialing. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Jerry Wills. We're talking about some ancient sites on this side of the planet and their relationship to 2012. Jerry, I said that I kind of view this thing as sort of a galactic surgery.
Right.
I don't think we're going to lose anything that is really necessary. I could be wrong. I could be entirely wrong, but I think we might lose a lot of things we don't really need that are killing us, and they're not helpful for us. And I think for some people, and this is important, for some people, any loss of anything is just a dire circumstance from their point of view. But we are addicted to a lot of things we shouldn't be, and we're addicted to a lot of things that are killing us, and some of those things may be swept away. And of course, you know, because we've talked about it, my view is I think December 21st, 2012 is going to come and go without much ripple on the surface at all. I could be wrong about that. I could be totally wrong about that, but I think December the 22nd, I'm going to get up and go Christmas shopping. I don't think there's going to be a great deal of stuff happening. But if I'm wrong, we're going to all find out about it at the same time.
Yeah. I don't think that it's so much about what we're going to lose as what we might potentially gain. If it takes losing a few negative traits to regain our humanity and our compassion towards each other and our belief in ourselves as people who are capable and able, then we'll have gained a great deal if that's what this is all about. Remember, this sign, the sign of Scorpio, that is right there popping its head up above the galactic center when we make this crossing, is not the scorpion, it's the eagle, and that represents the healer. Ophiuchus was, in ancient terms, was also known as Asclepius, the great healer, who was raised by Chiron. Ophiuchus raises the kundalini, the snake, to where it becomes the eagle. And that's what I think that we're looking quartz for ourselves is a great cleansing of our spirit, a great cleansing of our inadequacies,
mm-hmm.
being healed of that, and the best part of ourselves being made available to us if we want to embrace that. And for the people who don't, well, I don't know. Maybe they'll disappear. I haven't a clue. But I think that by and large, as people experience this great healing, which is in itself a great cleansing, then the greatest part of our struggle to be humans, not to be humans, that's wrong, to be gods upon this planet will become evident to each of us in our own way. That's what I think this is about.
Well, you've heard me say, and our audience has heard me say, that the problem with Earth is kangaroos. And the story that goes with that, for those who are new and haven't heard me talk about that, is this. If you were raised to believe you're a kangaroo, and you hop around everywhere, and you eat grass and nuts and berries, and you're trying to be the very best kangaroo ever, your mother, your daddy, your brothers, your sisters, your grandparents, cousins, aunts, uncles, everyone in your family believes they're kangaroos. And you're striving every day to be the best kangaroo you can be, you will meet with failure. And as you meet with that failure, you think, well, if I just work harder at being a better kangaroo, things will turn around for me. Okay, if I've just described you, if you think you're a kangaroo and you want to be the best kangaroo ever, how good a kangaroo could you be? Well, you can't be one at all, because that's not what you are, and you will always fail. It is my position that's the problem with the human race, because they're not actually human. The data,
exactly.
from every ancient civilization says that there were humans, and that we are not them. We were created either by God or by the gods, depends on which ancient scripts you read. And so we're running around trying to be human and be the best humans we can be, and we're not. That's why we keep failing. That's why we keep having wars, and that's why we keep falling on our faces as a race. We need to think above that. We need to think above being human, and that we are in some way, to some degree, related to either God, and I'm not speaking in a religious sense here, I'm speaking in a DNA sense, or to the gods. We are much more than human, and we need to think above that. So maybe this 2012 thing is going to switch on some of that higher thinking. I hope so. I'm not, people read into this, you know, I'll get email where people have read into it. Oh, so you think you're God? Let me see you walk on water. You're too late. I did that last week. That was a joke, folks. No, the point is, we're much more than what we have been told we are, and we need to think above what we've been told. And if we do, I think, there's not anything that can't be solved. I think there's not anything that can't be fixed. But as long as we think like primates, we'll live like primates, and we'll get primate results. So I don't know what you think about that, Jerry, but that's my take on it, and I know you've heard me do that before. So I'll give you the last shot here. What's your message to our folks tonight? What's the big point? Are you still with me, Jerry?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. We've been hearing a lot of static.
Okay, I'm sorry. I cannot hear you at all.
Okay.
I'm listening to you online. So okay. There's a little bit of a delay.
All right.
What I think basically that we, of course, everything you had to say is fabulous, and it's right on track with everything that we're finding in these ancient sites. And I believe that once we wake up to who we really are, we'll be able to do greater things than we've ever done, and that includes making sure that the mistakes of the past don't happen again, whether it's planetary upheaval or social, political, and this arena, that kind of mistake that has happened. We can explore far beyond our existence and look towards the future with a great deal more hope and confidence than we have ever had up until this time. I believe this is a moment that's coming towards us that is going to allow us to make a choice on whether we'll embrace it completely and go beyond all we know, or if we will simply be the same people who wake up the next morning and have an opportunity to explore the greatness that we were created with.
All right, the end of the show is upon us. Jerry, stay on the line with me for a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, that's a wrap for this evening. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want to call me, just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long everybody.